Yesterday, the market was about 1,000 up. Today, it's about 1,000 down, give or take. Ben Wink joins us now on the Wintrust Business Lunch. The markets and economy reporter at Insider. You can visit businessinsider.com to read his writing. Let's talk to him on the radio. Ben, you're back on WGN. What's the difference between today and yesterday?
Well, first off, thanks for having me back. I think, with these crazy market shifts that we're seeing, the way I see it is yesterday, investors were really focused on Chair Powell saying that, at least for now, the Fed is not considering a three-quarter size or 75 basis point rate hike for the future. And that's, for markets, that's a breath of fresh air, right? That's reassurance that, yes, the Fed may continue with its half point hikes through the summer. That's what markets have been pricing in for a bit, but it's not going to go beyond that. But it seems that today they're focusing on the fact that Powell essentially confirmed that additional half point rate hikes are on the table for the upcoming meetings in June and July. So, it's really just, investors trying to figure out what they're focusing on and digesting the news. But it is a pretty wild shift, especially when, for the most part, a lot of this was already anticipated. I think the biggest news out of that press conference yesterday was that the Fed is, at least for now, not considering that triple size or 75 basis point hike.
So what does this mean about my retirement plan or our retirement savings that are tied up in a lot of equities?
For now, I would just advise you, I'm telling my friends, you just don't look at your 401k, don't look at your brokerage account. I think this is part of the process of markets just digesting what it means for us to get, at least for the next few Fed meetings, with likely to be several more 50 basis point rate hikes. And it's important to note that we haven't seen, up until yesterday, we hadn't seen that big of a rate increase since 2000. And it really just, it emphasizes this new outlook coming from the Fed. They were taking inflation, seriously before, but this is a whole new, much more aggressive outlook and strategy that they're putting in place. So I think up until we start to see some more inflation readings and also some jobs reports, not just tomorrow's, but some additional jobs data, if we can start to see that we're still adding jobs at a good pace while inflation seems to be coming down, that's when I think the market will start to settle into a rosier or a more positive sentiment.
What will this mean to home mortgage rates and car loan rates?
I'm taking a short break right now from writing about mortgage rates because we just got data this morning that the 30-year fixed mortgage rate, the average rate on those, just hit the highest since 2009. So we're already seeing markets, respond. Granted, that data, that's not in response to yesterday's rate hike. But if we've seen mortgage rates climb more than 2% now through this year, they're now at the highest in more than a decade. And that's just from the quarter point hike that the Fed announced in March. So, we're going to see mortgage rates, car loan rates, credit card interest. That's going to climb, the price that people are paying for those is going to climb even faster in the months ahead. And especially if we see not just this latest half point rate hike, but if we see additional ones of that size through the summer.
Well, what do we have now on a 30-year fixed? It's six now?
It is five, a little over 5.25, 5.27%, up from 5.1%. And way up from, I think it was 3.1% at the end of last year. So, we haven't seen, an uptick in the 30-year fixed mortgage rate like this. Not in recent memory.
Yeah, right. We got to wrap this up. But then if I miss the boat on 3.1 and I'm looking at 5.2, you see it going up even higher. So if there's a way to capture 5.2, if you have to, that might still not be the worst option, huh?
Yeah, I think, if you're able to lock that in, then I think that's a smart move. But at the same time, home prices are still so high. So, and who knows if we're going to see prices drop or even drop that significantly. But I think, you know, if you're not in any rush, maybe it would be better to just see how the market plays out, because the Fed is clearly trying to cool down the price growth that we've been seeing over the past year.
Ben Wink is writing about this at businessinsider.com, businessinsider.com, where he's the markets and economy reporter. Ben, good to talk to you today. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Joan Salzman is a senior reporter at CNET. Joan, I see you guys are writing about a passwordless future for Apple, Google, and Microsoft. That's intriguing. Yeah. What's that all about?
Yeah, well, you know, people's tendencies, we all do it, to make sort of easily hackable passwords that makes them a key vulnerability for security for a lot of people, for millions of people. And so what Apple, Google, and Microsoft have most recently done is they've committed to adopting these features developed by kind of like an open alliance called FIDO. And the idea is that instead of creating your own passwords, often people make the same ones that they spread across multiple websites, you know, opening them up to hacking risks. It's these features that allow you to sort of use underlying identifying technology in like your phone, like your fingerprint sensor or your face scanner, using that as the key to unlock apps and websites that Apple, Google, and Microsoft operate.
But that's not brand new. I mean, we've been using thumbprint technology to open our phones for a while, right?
Yeah, to open our phones. But what this is trying to do is make it so that that can be the key that not only unlocks your phone, but also unlocks, if you're shopping online, it can unlock your PayPal account when you want to check out PayPal or any number of things. And what it really depends on is companies in creating interoperability so that multiple websites, multiple apps, all are committed to the same underlying technology that can all be shared so that you don't have to, you know, be dealing with all these disaggregated different ways of unlocking and authenticating yourself online. And so having Apple, Google, Microsoft, three of the biggest tech companies, commit to this alliance really goes a long way towards that.
And I like the sound of that, to be honest with you, because I'm another one of those people very frustrated by recollecting usernames or passwords, even when you write it down on a notepad with a big sign on the front that says my passwords, which we're not supposed to do. And then you type in your password and it still doesn't work. And you go, I know I'm doing it right. And then I went through this whole reset chain with an insurance company this week, and I thought there's got to be a better way. And I know I should have a wallet that has it all encrypted and I just go through the one thing, but I don't. And I'm not alone in that, am I, Joan?
No, a lot of people do. And that's two things about passwords. That's two things that really nobody likes. One, they are a hassle. And two, they open you up to risk. And so with Microsoft and Google and Apple supporting this alliance, hopefully it'll go away. So the concept of maybe not too long from now, we'll look at having to remember and create all these passwords as, you know, something from a bygone era.
Yeah, this may be a bad example, but one last thought about that, and that is there are times where I think, really, I need a username and password to get film developed at Walgreens, you know, or to download some pictures and then have it printed on a mug or whatever you're going to do. And there have just been times where I thought, I don't really feel like this security breach is going to compromise me too much. Do I have to have a username and password? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, and that's part of the problem. That's why there's, like you said, things like password managers, so that there's one single place that, and the password manager does the work. But a lot of people, I mean, I'm a tech reporter. I know I should, but I don't. I don't even have a password manager. And so that's why, you know, it's a solution, but it's a kind of solution that doesn't inherently solve the problem that user-generated passwords for discrete authentication, discreetly authenticating you into all these different things, Walgreens passwords,
all these
different ones, why something else is what people are striving towards in the future.
What's the story about Google revamping its employee review process?
Right. Well, this is an example about how in this sort of return to work era, Silicon Valley workers have been prompting tech giants like Google to make some changes. In this case, Google is changing its employee review process because of some feedback that it's been getting from its workforce of being dissatisfied, that they feel like it's a waste of time, and that it also in ways hinders promotions that people think that they deserve. So they're cutting back the numbers. Instead of having biannual reviews twice a year, they're just going to have one a year. It creates a new kind of rating system, so you can sort of rank your performance on the level of impact you have at the company. And it also is, the idea is that it would create a simpler path to promotions. But it's something that, you know, it's not limited just to Google. Facebook, aka Meta, cut back to just one review a year as well, because a lot of these companies are seeing people as they're coming back to work not wanting to go back to work under the terms that used to be kind of the norm.
Last week and the week before, it was all about Elon Musk. Can you give me a 30-second primer on what I need to know about Elon this week?
Right. Okay. So the latest Elon Musk news. So as you know, as people probably know by now, Musk is poised to take over Twitter and take it private. But he's trying to get new investors to join in his bid. And he's told some of those potential investors that, yes, he wants to take Twitter private, but then he might just make it public again. If and when he does take over Twitter, it's reportedly expected that he will be the interim CEO, which, of course, raises issues about not only will he be the owner, but acting as the interim CEO, that clearly gives him more control over Twitter's future shape, even if it is just for an interim period. And Twitter leadership, you know, people talking about workforces and not being happy, employees at Twitter are anxious about it. And so existing Twitter leadership is sort of calling on workers right now to stick it out and, you know, sort of make good on the community that they've worked so hard to serve for.
Yeah, no kidding. Interesting. Joan, as always, Salzman, the senior reporter at CNET.com. Thank you, Joan.
Thanks, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to WGN Radio. It's 12:37. Our next guest is Megan Rauterbusch. This is an interesting concept and app. She's the founder and CEO of Keep With. You can also click on keepwith.com. Megan, this is John. You're on the air. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
I see that you're a company that teaches companies how to network through technology. What are we talking about here?
So we're a platform that's helping the world network better, helping people to build strong and authentic networking relationships the right way. We've done that through services for years, and we're really excited that on April 25th, we launched some new technology into the world that's going to help people network better the right way.
You're Chicago-based, but there's apps or platforms that I think people are familiar with that it sounds like do this. LinkedIn, heck, Facebook for that matter. How are you different? What do you do that other platforms don't?
So Keep With is really about who you truly know, John. And that's one of the ways that we're different. I'm sure we've all been spammed on other platforms by people we've never met before. We're an ad-free, spam-free platform. We encourage users to reach out and get consent before introductions. And we are truly about who people know and bringing all of your people, personal and professional, into one place, sort of air traffic control for networking.
What do people accomplish in the platform? Are we looking for jobs, employers or employees, or just sharing mutually beneficial information?
All of the above. So we all have goals, and our goals are more easily attained with the backup of the people in our lives, our networks. So users can create a networking strategy through networking goals. They work on their relationships over time on a regular basis, making real relationship building a habit.
You know, I think all of us have been, people reach out to one another with a LinkedIn notification. And so frequently I don't know these people and I feel kind of bad because I don't participate with them. But then I think maybe those are missed opportunities, that's in fact networking. You can't just network with the people you know, you've got to get outside your circle. So talk to me about those accommodations.
Absolutely. So on the Keep With platform, we allow users to really think about who they want to meet, right? And to think about what the goals are for the relationships that they are looking to build. So strangers reaching out to you may not necessarily feel like networking. Networking is really building relationships. But here on Keep With, users are empowered to drive their meaningful relationship building so that they are reaching out to people they know, people they'd like to meet, and fostering connections where both people that are being introduced consent first before an introduction proceeds.
This is called keep with, just like it sounds, keep with. So give me an example of how somebody uses it. Describe an individual for me and the value to them.
Absolutely, John. So say there's a particular guest that you would like to have on your show for a reason, and you use the platform and say you'd like to meet this person. Turns out I know the person. Then you can reach out and say, hey, Megan, I see that you know this person. I'd really like them to be a guest on my show. Would you consider an introduction? And so then I would be able to reach out to both of you and get both of you to opt in, and an introduction would proceed. Another way that you can use it is by pull it. Right now, your people are all over the place. They're in your phone, they're in your social, they're in your CRM, they're all over. And so you'll be able to pull all of your people into our platform so that you have a holistic view of who is in your network.
Yeah, and that's frustrating sometimes. You go, I don't remember how I know this person. Was it Facebook? Was it Twitter? Was it some sort of other messaging platform? But about the first thing you just said, so I want a guest, you know the potential guest, you connect us. That sounds fairly rudimentary. That process doesn't already exist out there. I'm trying to think of how that would happen on a platform almost automatically, and I'm drawing a blank, but that seems pretty basic what you just described.
It's a great question, and actually it doesn't happen automatically. So what happens is, as I pursue an introduction between you and the person you'd like to meet, and I say, hey, I really would like you to meet John. I was just on a show. Here's why he'd like to meet you. Both people that are pursuing an introduction would have to consent first, right? And so then the introduction is made. And that does not currently exist out there within the context of a holistic platform that is air traffic control for your networking. But it exists now because we launched on April 25th.
And is that, I'm sorry, it launched April 25th, you said?
Yes.
So how many users do you currently have?
Currently, we have several hundred users, and we are aiming to have a beta group that consists of 10,000 users by the end of May. So we're well on our way.
So you're in a beta phase right now. I mean, this is hot off the presses, huh?
Absolutely. And we couldn't be more excited to be helping people connect better in an environment that prioritizes data, privacy, security, no spam, no ads, and real relationship building.
You've raised $1 million. You're in Series A right now.
We're completing our seed, so we've raised close to $1 million, and we still have a little bit of room left on our seed round cap table, and we already have a lead investor committed for our A round later this year, but we're absolutely having investor conversations right now.
I wonder what the hardest part of this is going to be. I mean, it sounds like a good idea, but a lot of good ideas don't go. I wonder how this thing's going to pop for you, or is it just such a necessary and intuitive idea that it's just going to happen?
You know, we're very lucky to have a strong team and supporters. All of the investors on our cap table are entrepreneurs themselves. We're partnering with the Girl Scouts. We have some large global corporations who are quite interested. We do feel there is a gap in the marketplace for a real networking platform, and so we are thrilled to fill that gap.
You're an attorney by trade, right?
I have a law degree and an MBA, and so I've used both of those throughout my career, ultimately as a chief compliance officer, not necessarily known as a relationship building function, but I get to use my CCO roots when I think about data, privacy, and security. And of course, using a law degree and an MBA when you're an entrepreneur happens every day.
No, I like that you were a hockey coach.
Yes, during my first year of law school, a classmate's son was on a team for young men who had special needs. And so myself and a couple of my classmates coached their ice hockey team, which was one of the most rewarding experiences of my life.
Megan Rauterbusch is the founder and CEO of something called Keep With. You can click on right now, keepwith.com. Good luck to you, Megan. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me, John. Appreciate it.
The Wintrust Business Lunch continues now with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Cameo is laying off about a quarter of its staff. Cranes reports the company is laying off 87 workers. Cameo allows people to order video shout-outs from celebrities. It had nearly 400 employees before this round of layoffs. The report says the company is showing signs of slower growth. It's the first high-profile startup in Chicago to announce layoffs. Baxter International has reportedly put its headquarters in Deerfield up for sale. Crane says the company is now looking for a new location for its HQ. Baxter has hired brokerage Jones Lang LaSalle to sell the 101-acre campus. The property includes 10 buildings between Saunders Road and the Tri-State Tollway north of Lake Cook Road. Baxter says it's rethinking its office needs as more workers choose hybrid and remote work options. Fitch Ratings has given Illinois another credit rating upgrade. The company says the upgrade reflects fundamental improvements in Illinois' fiscal resilience. Fitch also applauded what it called the state's meaningful contributions to reserves and sustained evidence of more normal fiscal decision-making. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
All right, now it's time for the business of food on WGN. Here's Steve Alexander.
Hey, you and I were talking off the air, John, about something that we have in common, and that is that neither of us has tried an original rainbow cone.
I know. Yeah, they're going to take away our Chicago cards.
I guess so. But, you know, there are a lot of iconic brands that Chicago has, the big national global brands like, well, Wrigley, Tootsie Roll, Snickers, that type of thing. But within the city, there are brands that are iconic only in their areas. And for about 60 years or so, Rainbow Cone was one of those. It started in 1926 in Beverly when there wasn't much else out there.
Catherine and Joe Sapp started at 9233 Western Avenue. They picked Western Avenue because it was a dirt road and people came out to go to the cemeteries on Sundays. And he knew it was going to grow. And he was right.
That's Lynn Sapp, the granddaughter of original Rainbow Cone founder Joe Sapp. There's a Mother's Day special at the original Rainbow Cone she'll tell you about in a minute. But first, for the uninitiated, Lynn, what is a Rainbow Cone?
The sliced cone of original Rainbow Cone starts with chocolate, then strawberry, then Palmer House, which is cherry, walnut, vanilla, then pistachio, and then the top is orange sherbet. So it's an ice cream and sherbet combination, and that's what makes it unique.
You said slices, not scoops?
No, we slice it. That's the difference.
In the 1960s, Lynn's parents, Bob and Jean, took over from Joe and Catherine, and in the late 80s, Lynn took over and started to spread the magic to other parts of the city.
I went and did Taste of Chicago my first year of owning it, and that helped put us on the map.
And then she opened a store at Navy Pier, but the original Rainbow Cone's name really grew after she partnered with Bona Beef a few years ago, which has added more locations and also added ice cream trucks. And Lynn says being a multi-generational family business themselves made them great partners.
So to find somebody that gets it and honors the tradition, they have taken that, they being the Bona Volante Group, have taken that and expanded that. They love it. So I'm so grateful for that.
Now, about that Mother's Day special.
Well, to honor moms, we give away free small rainbow cones with purchase while supplies last at Original Rainbow Cone in Beverly and in our Lombard location and in Darien.
That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
So let's take some time with Amy Guth to first start talking about Boeing. I'm really sorry to hear this news, Amy.
Yeah, well, it's, I think, not necessarily shocking news, but certainly big news, if accurate. So the Wall Street Journal has reported that Boeing is leaving the Chicago area and heading to Washington, D.C. Cranes noted that and cited a source that a lot depends on the CEO and said this person is quoted as saying to Cranes that the move had been under discussion for more than a year, and they noted that none of the leadership team is actually from Chicago. So it's a big deal because Boeing is the third largest publicly traded company based here. They're right behind Walgreens and Archer Daniels Midland. So it's obviously a huge economic stake, you know, that the city has in that company. But most of the workers have never been attached to the headquarters. Most of the workers are in the Seattle, Pacific Northwest area, where the commercial aircraft manufacturing operation is, or in Washington, D.C., where the defense aircraft operation is based. So I think it'll be interesting to see. Again, this is a report from the Wall Street Journal. So if that is accurate, that would bring an end to Boeing's tenure in Chicago, which started in 2001. And it was really a big deal at the time when they left the Pacific Northwest. They were considered a lot of locations, including Chicago, Denver, Dallas, and chose Chicago.
SpaceX is doing what?
Yeah. So people that use SpaceX for their internet, of course, it's satellite provided internet services. So a lot of people were reporting on social media that they were able to move their Starlink satellite dishes away from the address where they had registered for the service. So away from their homes, things like that. And so part of this is kind of the uptick of like a nomadic work from anywhere sort of thing that some people are doing. And they've said, hey, I was able to move this to, say, my lake house or an Airbnb somewhere else, and I still had internet service and it was fine. So now SpaceX is rolling out a $25 monthly fee for customers who want to relocate their internet service to other locations. They note that that won't work if you're, say, doing the van life thing. So if you're in a vehicle, it won't work. It has to be a stationary place. But that would raise the price if you are a Starlink customer from about $110 a month up to about $135 a month.
Talk to me about Walgreens and this lawsuit.
Yes. So Walgreens has settled a lawsuit around opioids in Florida. They've settled it for $683 million. And really what's alleged here is that Walgreens dispensed more than 4 billion opioid prescriptions in Florida over a 15-year period starting in 2006 and failed to pick up on red flags about potential misuse or fraud on about half of the opioid prescriptions that were filled. So that includes no admission of wrongdoing or liability on behalf of Walgreens. They pointed out in a statement. But this also includes CVS and Teva Pharmaceutical. They've also agreed to pay a combined $879 million to settle Florida's claims. And when you look at the kind of the full payout, it's been billions of dollars that have been paid out in total from different companies that have had different stakes in the opioid crisis. And this is among the latest of those settlements.
I want to make sure you said that right. Walgreens dispensed more than 4 billion opioid pills in Florida alone?
That's right. Over a 15-year period starting in 2006.
15 years, but that's an astonishing number to me.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And Bloomberg has done a lot of reporting on the opioid crisis, as have many other outlets. But I thought that was a pretty astonishing number, too. And that in the lawsuit, it alleges that half of them, so about 2 billion of those prescriptions, had some red flags to it, either some, you know, potential red flags of abuse or fraud or something like that. That's a really staggering number, especially when you're thinking about just one state.
Yeah, and maybe they just do the math. Like if you're Walgreens, and good Lord, the cash register is running, but at some point you think these numbers don't add up. There's not enough people to support this. So something is running afoul. They need to be sort of a gatekeeper of sorts, right? I mean, that's what this sounds like.
Well, I think that that's a lot of what these various opioid-related lawsuits have been about. Is it on the pharmacy and the pharmacists? Is it on the opioid manufacturers? You know, who's really kind of left holding the ball here? And it's really shaping up to be, when you look at kind of some of these settlements that and these payouts, it's really kind of shaping up to be not really one point of failure, but kind of a system-wide one where there was a lot of opportunities to maybe stem some of that.
Amy Guth reporting on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We'll talk again. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.